Early this past Thursday morning, we came to learn that a treaty was signed between the United States and China regarding energy use and production. Now, superficially, it was claimed that this treaty would protect the environment. The actual details of the treaty reveal something very different, very, well, lack of balance, let's say. This has also raised concerns about whether this is a new path that Obama will take to do an end run around the U.S. laws, as well as the legislative branch of government. Joining us now with her analysis of this treaty and its potential impact is the Executive Director of Energy Makes America Great, author whose latest book is Energy Freedom. We say good morning to Marita New. Good morning, Marita.
Good morning. It's a treat to be with you.
And the website for Energy Makes America Great is the obvious location, energymakesamericagreat.org. And let me just bring up for the person listening, I don't want to go into a lot of stats and figures because it makes someone's ears go numb. But basically, the treaty that has been signed is setting the U.S. has set a new goal to reduce emissions of greenhouse gases by between 26% and 28% over the next 11 years. While that is going on, China can continue to grow, some estimate, at a rate of 17% per year, all the way to 2030. Gee, that doesn't sound like a fair deal, does it?
Well, no, it is not a fair deal, and it penalizes the United States economy while allowing the Chinese economy to continue to grow. And the reason China will not ever agree to the kind of cuts that President Obama and the environmental community would like them to make, and I think this is a really important policy point for your listeners to understand, is the reason China will not agree to cuts that others want them to make is simply that it will hurt their economy. To me, that should be a big red flag to the rest of us. Wait, if it's going to hurt China's economy, but we're agreeing to double our projected cuts, what is this going to do for our economy? I'll tell you, it surely is not going to help it.
Well, let's look at that as far as for the individual is concerned right now, because a lot of people, although I try to make this point as often as possible talking about this subject, when you talk about coal, people think of coal fire stoves, local, you know, more traditional, here's a piece of coal, you burn it. People fail to understand how much coal mining is responsible for the electricity that turns their lights on, their heater, you know, whatever the case may be, in the home that runs off of electric. And a treaty like this has the coal industry right in the crosshairs.
Yes, it's another nail in the coffin in Obama's war on coal. And I often like to point out that if President Obama had treated the oil and gas industry as he has the coal industry, he would not have gotten reelected, because the unemployment numbers in this country would be through the roof, as the oil and gas industry has created several million jobs in the last 6 years.
Statistics about global energy production emissions, we're always told that we're the bad guys because we overuse and our production means are dirty and we're adding to the imagined damage to the environment, which I always say is arrogant. Just, you know, go look at any major superstorm that comes through here, Hurricane Sandy, for example. I'm still yet to be convinced that anything mankind can do can combat the force of nature and whatever it wants to do, but that's another talk for another time. But if you look at China, China accounts currently for around 30% of global emissions, and they're going to be allowed to increase that with no ceiling up to the year 2030.
Yes, when you look at the president's clean power plan that was introduced on June 2nd, the clean power plan proposes to shut down 300 coal-fired power plants in this country before their retirement date, and to shut them down prematurely. And the analysis of this clean power plan says that if we do this in the United States, we're going to really hurt our economy, but secondly, we are going to only impact global carbon dioxide emissions by like less than 5.5%. It's going to be a minuscule impact, because as this new deal that the president just arranged in China says, China is going to continue to grow, to continue to burn more coal, to continue to produce more carbon dioxide. And so while we are really hurting our economy with these supposed cuts, it's going to have virtually no impact on a global scale.
Talking with Marita Noon, who is the executive director of Energy Makes America Great, author whose latest book is Energy Freedom, energymakesamericagreat.org on the web, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. We're always lectured and preached to about alternative energy production, everything from wind turbines onshore, offshore, solar panels, hydroelectric power, and the list goes on from there. And we've been hearing about these alternatives since really the 1970s in any sort of solid basis. Why haven't any of them taken if they're supposed to be the end-all, be-all alternative to conventional traditional energy production?
Well, I think there's several reasons. The first and most obvious one is they're extremely expensive, and they cannot exist without government subsidies. Wind and solar need government funding in order to survive. And in fact, as they talk about cutting up the production tax credit, for example, for wind, which is something going on right now in the lame duck session of Congress, the wind industry is up in arms over the thought of losing this production tax credit because they cannot survive without it. The other big reason they've not taken over as supposedly predicted is that they were predicated on a lie. The idea of renewables is largely based on an energy shortage. It's based on a model of scarcity. And as we know in this country, we now have surplus natural gas supplies, and our oil production in this country is up at levels not seen in the last three decades. So we don't have an energy shortage as was projected, and so the renewables aren't needed to fill any gaps.
If I remember statistics correctly, America is on the curve to surpass Saudi Arabia in oil production.
Yes, we should be the world's number one producer of oil, literally within a matter of months. And an important thing to realize here is this increase in oil production in America is up 65% on state and private lands, but it is down 6% on federal land. So when you hear President Obama taking credit for the increased production in this country, that's totally false. Yes, we have had increased production, and that is wonderful. Gives America a new form of energy security that we've never had. But imagine if, under the Republican-controlled Congress now, we see energy policy changes that would force more production on federal lands, and we saw the production on federal lands, instead of being down 6%, imagine if it, too, was up 61%. We would not just pass Saudi Arabia. We would be, you know, smoke past them.
And we should say, too, any of the activity on federal land were through permits and exploration authorizations from the Bush administration that the current administration couldn't extinguish or pull the plug on.
Yes, you're good point on that. So we could see some real changes and economic development as a result of that from the Republican-controlled Congress.
Wrapping our time with Marita Noon from Energy Makes America Great. Her latest book is Energy Freedom, energymakesamericagreat.org on the web here on Issues and Ideas. Now, as you mentioned, we have a new Congress coming in. We have a treaty that was negotiated apparently for months in secret, and this is the only one we know about so far. There could be some other things in the pipeline, too, as far as energy between the Asian countries and the U.S. But what does Congress have to say about this with an international treaty? Does it need to have an official blessing to be enacted? Is this, like I alluded to in the introduction, a cousin to an executive order out of the Oval Office now?
It's more of a cousin to an executive order. What took place in China was an agreement. It is not actually an international treaty, and even in Paris next year, 2015, and a year from now, when the UNIPCC meets, that we're not going to get a treaty out of that. And President Obama knows that he could not get an international treaty to replace Kyoto signed out of the Senate when the Democrats controlled the Senate. Now that the Republicans control the Senate, there's no hope that he will ever get an international treaty signed by the Senate. So he's going to do some kind of political shaming type of actions to try to force other countries to cut their carbon emissions. And Europe recently, a couple weeks ago, had their EU climate summit, and they came up with these cuts that they're going to do. But at the very end, they put an amendment in, which is what got the other all the countries on board, which says, basically, it says, if all the other countries don't agree to similar cuts at Paris in 2015, then this is basically null and void. And so it's everybody's kind of in a I will if you will kind of mode, but we know China and India won't.
But yet Obama agrees to a treaty where, well, we take the lead in cutting our legs off and let the other country surpass us.
That's what we're looking at, exactly, unfortunately.
Well, to learn more about this issue, the work of Energy Makes America Great, learn more about why something like this affects you as an energy consumer, you know, like it or not, it's necessity, and whether or not someone thinks you're using too much, we all have our individual needs for our individual situations. EnergyMakesAmericaGreat.org, place to learn that. Marita's latest book is Energy Freedom. Find out more about that as well as at the website for Energy Makes America Great. And Marita Mnoon, thanks so much for being here this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.